what keeps us from being adaptable is not primarily our skills of adaptability, it's primarily our personality, right? Because it, the very thing of who we are is a refusal to be adaptable in most people. Because mostly we've been taught, and this touches on future shock very powerfully, because we've been taught through all of human history, not only by our schools and our society, but by our very nature as humans, that we should grow up to be somebody named Ira Wolf or Michael Lee. And when we've done that, you know, we can describe ourselves and say, this is how we are. I am this way and that way. I like certain things. I don't like certain.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Geeks, Geezers, and Googleization Show, the home of Googleization Nation, where we talk with HR and business thought leaders about the crazy, never normal shift going on all around us. Our goal is to bring you ways to reimagine tomorrow and explore the ever-changing convergence of people, business, and technology. Here is your host, Ira Wolf.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Geeks, Geezers, and Googleization Show. Thank you for being part of Googleization Nation. I'm Ira Wolf. If you think this is just another podcast, think again. This is the voice of the most important conversations we can have on the future of work confronting business leaders and people today. My goal is to bring you new ways to reimagine tomorrow and explore the ever-changing convergence of business, technology, and people. In other words, help you make sense of this never normal, messy, weird, unfamiliar, and fascinating world that we seem to be careening toward. On today's episode, I'm diving into a question that's been bugging me for most of my adult life. Why is it so hard for us, including myself, to make a change when the result of continuing to do whatever it is we're doing is not working? When, even when the writing is on the wall, we hesitate. We procrastinate, we flail, we stare like deer caught in the headlights. Yesterday, while reading feedback and responses to my students' assignments about the results of their adaptability quotient assessment, I had one of those fabulous aha moments. Now, I suspect many of you like me are like me when it happens, and you can't wait to share it and discuss it with someone. Well, today, I have that opportunity with the world-recognized expert in the mindset of innovation and the art of human capacity reinvention, which is a mouthful. My guest is Michael Lee. In addition to a deep dive into adaptability, which you know is one of my favorite topics, we're going to peel back the layers on a little something that I recalled in that aha moment called the Dunning-Kruger effect. I know that's a mouthful, but stick with me for a minute. You know how sometimes we think we're the LeBron James, the Steph Curry, the Caitlin Clark after getting nothing but net after tossing up a basketball. Well, the same thing happens to us in our day-to-day lives when it comes to complex decision-making. It turns out there's this psychological quirk where we, and yes, I'm including myself here, might overestimate our ability. It's like believing you're a gourmet chef because you just nailed it with that grilled cheese sandwich. This bias can make leaders think we're ready for whatever change throws our way, armed with nothing but our past wins, years of experience, and a sprinkle of optimism. We've been there, we've done that. Am I right or am I right? Unfortunately, we're wrong. The Dunning-Kruger effect, defined as a cognitive bias in which people with limited competence or some competence is a particular in a particular domain overestimates the ability. Basically, we overestimate our, you know, we think we're LeBron James or we think we're the gourmet chef. It's like wearing blinders, making us obvious to the complexity of new challenges and the need for fresh perspective. So why does this matter? In a world that's spinning faster with never normal change, adaptability is king. And that's why I can't wait to dive into this conversation with Michael. But before I bring him to the stage, today's show is again brought to you by our good friends at Avanti. Avanti is at the forefront of making everywhere work work. Next week at this time, I'll be participating in the Avanti Solutions Summit. and I can't wait. There's an amazing 700 people registered already for the event, more than double what they anticipated. There'll be over 70 educational sessions and keynotes, but what I'm most excited about is the release of the 2024 Everywhere Work Report. I can't wait to share the results with you over the coming weeks, but there's still a chance for you to join me and the Avanti team on April 10th in Dallas, Texas for this epic summit. Let's learn a little bit more about the summit and how you can attend.
Avanti Solutions Summit 2024 is just around the corner. Join us in April to shape the future of work together with Avanti. Learn more about this exciting event and register on the Geeks, Geezers, and Googleization website. Use code SM Industry Partners.
As you heard, you can learn more at geeksgeezersandgoogleization.com or by visiting avanti.com or just message me and I'll be happy to send you the link. Now it's time to dig into a little future shock and awe with Michael Lee. Michael's the creative breakthrough artist, he's also an artist, but creative breakthrough catalyst, a working creative professional who facilitates breakthroughs for leaders and their teams. As I mentioned earlier, he's a world-recognized expert in the mindset of innovation and the art of human capacity reinvention. He's internationally certified as a master of creativity, and innovation coaching, a master NLP practitioner, that's a mouthful. He's certified in six other coaching disciplines and is one of only three Africans accredited as an adaptability quotient AQAI professional practitioner, which is how I met Michael. He's a two-time TEDx speaker, writes a regular column on creativity for Mail and Guardian, does a monthly slot on Radio 702, is an advisory board member on World Creativity and Innovation, an EXCO member of the community, creative community. And get this, his TV productions have won 5 South African film and TV awards. He's directed documentaries and reality shows in the US, Europe, and numerous African countries. Let's give Michael Lee a warm Googleization Nation welcome. Hey, Michael. Welcome.
Thank you, Ira. Thank you. It's good to be in the Googleization Nation.
Yeah, and it's a pleasure. Thanks for joining me. I know it was sort of a last-minute reach out to our community the other day, and it was one of those things. Sometimes you just get to know somebody from the immediate responses and a quick search of your website that we were going to have some strong connections. So you got a long list of accomplishments, and hopefully we'll dig into some of those. But let's talk about how did you get, you obviously have this fascination with creativity, innovation, and now adaptability. Talk about a little bit of your journey, because obviously you have a background in writing and production and creativity.
Yeah, I actually, as you can hear from my accent, I'm from the US, but about in my early 20s, I decided to become one of those Americans in Prague. If you remember that weird period right after the wall came down and everybody ran to Eastern Europe, Central Europe to like be creative. So I was involved with a literary magazine there, wrote a couple of novels, which I actually lost. And that's another story. But eventually made my way to New York, where I started in Prague and in New York, learned how to make TV and ended up in TV and film. And ended up in South Africa through a long series of events that would take longer than we have on the podcast. But, after working in film and TV here for a long time, I actually got hired to start a film school in Johannesburg, South Africa. And as part of the development of the school, we wanted to create a creativity curriculum that was separate from, being a director or an editor or whatever, but actually looking at creativity as a science, separately. And what ended up happening was that I ended up going to Nigeria to do a reality show. So we were teaching the class using just like, The Artist Way by Julie Cameron and the kind of classic creativity books. While I was gone, somebody else came in and didn't do that. And then when I came back, they didn't have the books. So I had to start teaching without the books and started developing a curriculum, which started to understand how creativity works and basically looked at the gaps in what people were doing to help people be more creative, and also the complication of it, and try to find a way that was much more succinct and focused and easier to operate with. So that was about 12 years ago that started, and more recently, the last few years, just before COVID, started doing that in the real world outside of the school. So that's the really short version of the journey to becoming an African American in Johannesburg, who focuses on helping organizations and people be more creative and more adaptable through the AQ stuff and more innovative.
Yeah, so all of that led you to the AQ. Now, to me is, I think everybody in the world should be, you know, understanding AQ and adaptability like you. I mean, and especially in these times. But as a film producer, a creative, an innovator, you know, what led you, or what was your introduction to the AQ that, I guess, what was the connection there? Why did you see that as a possible aid, tool, solution that you didn't have in your already pretty large toolbox?
Well, so first of all, in 2019, I think I gave a talk, a very short talk here about let's create AQ in Africa, and then discovered very shortly thereafter that somebody was already doing it. So when I discovered that someone was already doing it, I got very interested in finding out about that. And then the other part of the answer, though, is that I operate with a principle that we've called innativity. And it's on the basis of, and originally was creativity and innovation are really one thing, right? Creativity is thinking differently from yourself, not just thinking differently from other people, because that isn't really useful. You have to be able to adapt your thinking to attack the problem you want to solve. And innovation really just the physical action that follows that. So acting differently from yourself. Adaptability kind of completes the circle because it's being different from yourself, right? So it starts with adaptability, being different from who you are, right? Naturally, being able to change who you are. Mm-hmm. Then that gives you thinking differently, and then that gives you acting. And once you innovate, you have to adapt to the innovation. So it's just a cycle that done correctly is really positive, and everything but done incorrectly is very damaging.
Yeah, well, as I said, our thought process is just from our couple of WhatsApp chats and a few emails back and forth. I assume that there was this synergy, there was a synchronicity in our thought process. And similarly, you know, one of the things that AQ or what I found was missing, that missing piece you talk about completing the circle, was we talk about helping people be creative. And I've been on this pursuit for years. My master's of leadership, I was introduced to a lot of De Bono's work, in creativity. So I was looking ways to kind of think outside the box. And obviously a creative says, what box? You know, who said there was a box? But we didn't teach people how to get there, because in order to be more creative, you have to take chances. You're going to make mistakes. There's no such thing as a stupid idea, but there are ideas that don't work. And that seems to be the hang up with most people that, I'm teaching this class and I bring it up all the time, but hopefully they're learning as much from me as I am from them, because they're giving these responses. But here's 22 young students. Well, obviously they are young, but 18 to, let's say, 21, 22 years old, taking an innovation and entrepreneurship class. And even 2/3 of the way into the semester, as of yesterday, one of their biggest fears is to ask a dumb question in class. And that fear factor is there. And what I keep emphasizing with them, and I've introduced them to the adaptability quotient and so forth, but I keep talking about, it's about mindset. It's about developing that growth mindset to not be afraid to take the risk that if I ask a dumb question, if I ask a question that the other 21 people in the room assume is stupid and not worthy, then you ask yourself, why? You know, are they wrong? Are they just stuck in their fixed mindset and they don't see the opportunity? Or is it really a dumb question, but it's a learning opportunity? It's not a, the question itself has no context. It either is a good question, it's going to stimulate thought, or it's going to take you down another road. So I love the fact that you said this is going to complete the circle, or it's a third, you know, it's a third leg on a three-legged stool or whatever we do. But I don't know how we teach people to be more creative, more innovative, to grow, to thrive. I mean, we throw out all, leaders seem to throw out all these, this word salad of expectations and goals and things that we need to, that people need to change, but we don't give them the tool that to get them through that, that hurdle. It's like just giving somebody a new tool. You could give me a basketball and ask me to shoot it from, throw it from center court all day long. It's, with all the practice in the world, I'm probably not going to be as good as the top people. And I don't care, I'm 5'8 and I have got no lift and I'll never dunk a basketball. But you can teach me the fundamentals, how to do that. Doesn't mean I wouldn't try, but it's not going to be easy. And that's the part that people give up on.
The difference between the basketball example and, you know, creativity or adaptability is that all of us are born equally adaptable. Right. You know, you're 5'8". I'm basically 5'8"-ish, 5'9", maybe. I can't jump. I definitely can't. Will never dunk a basketball except on those kiddie courts, you know. But and no matter how much, you know, but we could learn to shoot better and, you know, make a 3-point shot and that kind of stuff. But we are all born adaptable because that's the whole point. That's how we learn. Right. So we all have infinite adaptability. Because when we're born, we're nothing, right? There's the whole nature-nurture dialogue, but the bottom line is anybody who's had a baby knows that there's not a whole lot of person in the baby yet compared to the person we are now, right? And we've created ourselves, you know, Ira, yourself and myself, we've created who we are over, unfortunately, for me, at least many years. And we get very determined to stick with that, right? Because we've invested a lot in it. So people become, not only do people become more firmly entrenched in who they are, meaning less adaptable because they don't want to adapt because they want to be who they are. They've invested a lot in it, right? But also because of the lack of practice and adaptability, they become less adaptable on top of that. So they're both the willingness or the mindset and the ability are compromised, right? But we could be as adaptable as a 2-year-old child if we want to and we practice it. That's the difference between the basketball example. But the similarity basketball example is we don't practice it and we don't want to, right?
Right.
If I took your brain now and put it in your brain when you were 1 year old, well, you are sitting in a chair, but you'd still be sitting. You wouldn't be able to walk, right? Because you would have tried like 50 times and you'd be like, this is not what I'm good at. Like you say, you're not good at dunking a basketball, you know? And although the basketball example is pretty good because you're probably not going to ever learn to jump that high. It's just physically impossible. But there's also a mindset thing there. Like maybe you could learn to jump that high, you know? Maybe. But
yeah,
it's not worth it because it's not who you are. You're 5'8" guy, right?
Yeah. I mean, we had, it's about a year ago, we had Stephen Kotler on, and you know, he's the father, you know, he's the father of Flo, and you know, he actually just released his book Gnar Country at that point, and we talked a little bit about that. And here's a guy in his mid to late 50s doing some pretty extreme sports, what we would consider almost reckless. So to your point, as a, you know, very older baby boomer, learning to dunk a basketball when sometimes, you know, bending over to put my shoes on or socks on seems to be a monumental effort. Yeah, I probably can do it, but am I willing to, you know, throw my back out? Am I willing to break a bone? Am I, though we can do it, but those are risks, and those are calculated risks, and some people are willing to take those and they're not. So, you know, I want to make sure that everybody understands that we're not talking about having people do extreme things. Sometimes it could be simple as changing your job, changing your routine. You know, we're living, you know, the topic of this, you know, our focus is about future of work. And just yesterday, I saw, what was the company? A CEO of a large company just decided that, although just months ago they were going to do a hybrid type of work schedule, or a remote work schedule, now people have to come back to work 3 days a week. Okay. And I always ask that question, and this is the lead into this Dunning-Kruger that I mentioned earlier, is that is the struggle with the change of remote work to hybrid work from going to the office, going to work, related to the leader's inability to manage a team, to collaborate, to be innovative, to be creative remotely? Is it that it can't be done, or they're just not competent enough yet? Are they in that conscious, the unconscious incompetence thing that they don't know what they don't know, therefore it won't work, you know, or do they have a justification for that because some of the employees may not be competent to work remotely, to work on their own, to do it visually, digitally, you know, or is it reality? Is it, and we don't know. I mean, but people are making these gut adjustments without helping people adapt.
I just want to touch on something you said earlier about that we're not telling people to do something dangerous, right? The problem we do face is that people treat it as dangerous. Like,
good point.
It is as dangerous to a lot of people to change jobs as it is to skydive or something, right? That's the problem we're facing, because although we have the skill to adapt as much as we did when we were a child, we don't think we do, right? And we don't think that the risk, you raise a great word, risk. We don't think that the risk is worth it. But there is not actually, a lot of the risk is just imaginary.
Yeah.
Right? We're not standing in front of a lion in the jungle and it's about to eat us.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, changing my job. You know, it's actually not necessarily a risk at all. It might be a much bigger risk not to change your job.
Yeah. You know? And you bring up such a good point. And again, all the my dots are connecting in my head. If people can't see that, but you know, one of the things is, and this just connected with me in the last 2 days as well, where when the Dunning-Kruger effect came up. But there's something called the Holmes-Rey scale. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's H-O-L-M-E-S dash. It's two gentlemen, Holmes and Rey. It's R-A-H-E. And people can look that up. And what they identified is, I can't remember the number of stressful activities in life, but it goes, they identified, like, let's say, 100 stress-inducing activities, events in life that really challenge people. And it goes from getting a traffic ticket at one end. And I remember some of the numbers that were assigned to it. And out of a scale of 1 to 100, that's an 11. All right, so it's pretty low on the scale. Versus the death of a spouse, which is at 100, at the high end. Okay, so these are really stressful life events that disrupt people. The reason that I'm bringing up is that you triggered that moment in my head was with changing a job. Changing a job's 37. I think 37, 38 on the scale. So still down there, not as great as marriage, retirement, birth of a child. Okay. I'm not sure if public speaking was on there, but it obviously that is one of those fears. But what's interesting is if changing a job was a 37, then the next spot up, which was 38, was the death of a good friend. So when you think about the stress that's induced from the death of a close friend, and you have that same level of anxiety, stress, grief of changing a job, that's enormous. I mean, forget all those other things, those big events. But people say, well, what's so hard? You apply for the job, you had an interview. And I always say it's the fear of rejection, because what if I apply and I don't get it? I have to go through interviews, and they're always stressful, especially if you get interviewed by a manager who can't interview, there's all these stress points. So why would I want to do that? I mean, I got my paycheck. I got remote teen. I drive by the Starbucks. I drive through every morning. I've got this commute, or I've got this routine at home. Why would I want to change that? Even if I hate my boss, I hate my job, I hate what I do, and I'm unhappy.
Yeah. And of course, adaptability, as you know, as an AQ professional, highly adaptable people are 50% more healthy, mentally healthy. Right. And burnout is 50% lower. It's just like, it's like a massive shift in their health, as brain health, and mental right. health, and even physical health. But also what you point out is one of the things that's really shocked me when I learned this is that it is more stressful, or at least equally stressful, to worry about losing your job as it is to lose your job.
Interesting.
Right. So people are actually more worried about having to adapt than when they have to actually adapt and they're forced to. Okay. It's a lot less stressful to actually have to adapt than to think about having to adapt.
Yeah, which brings up, and there are so many people, because all you read about and hear about, which is legit to some extent, about AI, that, you know, robots. Just last week, we talked with Daniel Levine, the number one world trend spotter. So his focus is just on what trends are. And we talked about that, and that is one of the number one trends that they spot, that there's unquestionably, there's going to be more robotics, more AI, more automation. It's not necessarily going to eliminate the job as we know it. And I think that's the clause that people don't put on. Is AI, automation, robotics, technology going to eliminate jobs? Yes, but it's not going to eliminate all jobs. It's going to change jobs. So, part of what I found fascinating with the AQ was, here's a model, here's a framework that's been researched and tested and validated that can provide a roadmap to help people move forward to find new opportunities that may even be better. And along with that, if you're not stressing about losing your job because you have new skills and new opportunities and a fresher outlook, then your well-being and your mental health is improved. But we can't get, it seems that we're struggling to get people to that point.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's one of those, we're talking future works. This is the perfect conversation. And we're supposed to talk about future shock at some point. And in that book, as well as many other places, we notice that every time there's a major technological shift, which we call an industrial revolution, right? Every one of those caused not only major job losses, but major job creation. Every one of them caused people to panic and worry that it was going to be a catastrophe for human beings. And every time it was wrong, right? The World Economic Forum has put out statistics repeatedly, and I'm not going to quote them exactly because they keep changing. But the number of jobs created by the fourth and fifth industrial revolution is 2 to 3 times more than the number of jobs lost. You know, it is just a shift. If you look at, I don't know, American, I saw a clip recently of different American presidents starting from, I think, the first George Bush until even Trump. Every single one of them was talking about the need to retrain and reskill workers. It's simply like people don't want to change, then, you know, they want to stick with what they have. Then this is not the time to be alive for that, you know, because Future Shock, right, raised the whole point that technology was speeding up so fast that we had to learn to adapt. For the first time in human history, adaptability was going to become more important than, you know, any other skill. Up until that time, the most important skill was being able to replicate past success by doing what people did before. And what he identified, Alvin Toffler, was that we were in a position, you know, where we had to stop doing that and start adapting as the best skill, even more important than reading and writing, he said. And the part about that, Ira, that has always shocked me and shocks people when you know, if they're not an expert on the book, is that he wrote that book 50 years ago, 1 year before ARPANET was created, which is the internet. Like, you know, his statement that technology is changing so fast that we're becoming sick and can't keep up. There wasn't even an internet. Right. Like, not even a private one, like not even like in people's offices, like, you know, in the science labs and in the defense department, there was nothing. And then he already said it was too fast, you know? So people need to definitely deal with that fact that if they don't want to change, if they don't want to adapt, then they should go back in time or something, because there's nothing they can do about that. Right?
So I warned you this was going to go incredibly fast. We're already at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a really quick break. We're talking with Michael Lee about future shock and awe. And we're actually just, when we come back, we're going to talk about, this is my original copy, 1970. Pages are yellowed. I know you may not be able to see them there. They're more like parchment paper at this point. But again, I was a college student, and the book had just come out. Fascinating book, probably got me on my journey. Put it away, forgot about it. But then during the pandemic, it seemed to, you know, raise out of the ashes. I literally had to pull out of a box that I was throwing out of old books. Like, what do I do with this book? And it just nailed it, because it talks about what life will be when the pace of technology accelerates past our abilities to cope with it. And it creates a shattering stress and disorientation. That's what future shock is. And when you look at the levels of burnout, stress, mental illness, fear, everything that we were talking about for the last 25 minutes or so, we are living in future shock. So when we come back, we're gonna have a few minutes, and we're gonna start tying the pieces together to wrap things up and talk about the role of adaptability quotient, how that's an antidote for that, and also get some other potential solutions. So stay tuned. I will be right back. Thank you for listening to Geek Skeezes and Googleization. We're today with Michael Lee, and we're going to take a quick break.
Are your employees feeling stuck and just showing up for a paycheck? Is your workforce working harder to get back to normal than adapting to the future? It's time to help them break their addiction to certainty and develop a growth mindset. Developed by one of the world's top-rated future of work thought leaders, AQ Plus Mindset is a powerful tool to help your employees embrace change, adapt faster, and grow on the job. Conveniently delivered to any smartphone or laptop in easy-to-digest 5 to 10-minute lessons, managers can sit back and watch employee attitudes shift towards growth and innovation in just 30 days. Are you ready to help your employees thrive in this ever-changing, never-normal world? Encourage them to show more grit, resilience, adaptability, and unlock their potential? The journey to a growth-filled future starts with a growth mindset. Visit aqplusmindset.com or call 484-373-4300.
Hey, welcome back, everyone, to Geek Skeezes and Googleization. We're with Michael Lee. We're talking about future shock and awe, how to basically save your life, your business, and your butt. We're GP rated. So basically, what can we do to overcome our own incompetence? Future shock, you got the modern version.
I got the new one.
Yeah. And there's also, and I mentioned Daniel Levine, when I interviewed him in 2019, so that was before the pandemic. And by the way, we were talking about future trends at that point, and we had not talked about a pandemic. So although it was sort of on the horizon, we weren't quite there yet. But they published a book, and it's quite fascinating. And it was, I think, 50 authors or 50 thought leaders who wrote about future shock. So it was sort of like 15 years later, their commentary on future shock. I don't have the name of the book offhand. It's on my shelf somewhere, but you might want to look that up too. So you had a conversation, or you had a presentation about adaptability quotient, and then you were introduced to the AQAI community. What was in, you know, or from the AQ, what was, I guess, what resonated with you? What did you see that was, that attracted you at that this could be a potential solution or enough to, you know, add it to your pretty impressive portfolio of tools to help people?
Well, as I said, I'd already been thinking about AQ before and thought like that was, and it's not, I don't think that Ross and the guys who've made the AQ assessment were the first people to think of it. It's been in the ether for 20 years. It's just they're the first people to actually go out and do the work and spend the money to develop it into something usable. But it's certainly been a vibe, you know, a vibration that AQ was the next IQ. EQ, AQ was coming, you know? So when I stumbled across people were doing it for real, and it's a serious thing, and it's very well developed and very well run. And I mean, you know, because you're part of the community is really solid, really good people who care about adaptability and all of the various things that connect to adaptability, like creativity. And it's a very well-run community. There's a lot of activity. The fact that you and I are here together today is a reflection of that. You know, and the people in the community genuinely are high level thinkers who are at the cutting edge of this, right? Because even though we're 50 years late, you know, even though we were told 50 years ago that it was all changing within 10 years, the one thing Alvin Toffler seemed to get very wrong was he overestimated, I think, human beings' willingness to adapt. Because it's 50 years later and we're still not getting it.
That's what we're talking about today.
You know, I think it's a great community of people and a great product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just to kind of refresh, because hopefully we have some new listeners here, but this may be a reminder for others. What I found fascinating was that the model of the AQ encompassed a lot. So it wasn't just putting the burden on individuals. And oftentimes, you know, one of the abilities is grit and resilience. So in 2020, 2021, we sort of normalized those words. We got tired of hearing about how gritty we were and how resilient we were. And they became the words of the year for grit and resilience. But if you grit and resilience allows you to keep going, to continue going, which we need, perseverance, getting knocked down, getting back up, bouncing back, doing it quickly. But that just keeps you going in the same direction for a lot of people. And that's something I tried to get across to my students, that they all said, but, you know, I've had setbacks before. I've been injured in sports. You know, I was rejected from the college I wanted to go to. They had all these things, but you put it in perspective of, yeah, they could be gritty and resilient, but that doesn't make them adaptable, because in order to be adaptable, you're going to have to sometimes change direction. And in order to change direction, you have to go down a new path. Just like if you're lost, you know, it's all, I don't know where to go. And some of us just say, well, I'll turn left and see where it takes us. How bad could it be? And others is, well, I don't know what's there. I don't know if I make that left turn. So, you know, we talk about what I liked about it, that put the model together with grit, resilience, growth mindset, mental flexibility, and the ability to unlearn, to undo those pathways. But it also looked at environment. I mean, it looked at that, for 28 years, my business was focused on helping companies hire the right people. And it caught me soon. It was, sometimes we help people hire right people, but they're the wrong people for that culture, the wrong people for that management. And oftentimes the environment's not ready to change or doesn't allow people to adapt. So what I loved about the ACE model and the AQ was it said, okay, management has some responsibility in this, in creating, giving the support, creating the environment, creating the practices to help create an innovative, adaptive environment, and so do individuals, from leaders down the front line of building their abilities, but also sometimes our personalities get in the way. You know, an introvert says, but I don't like working, you know, I need to work at home, I love working at home, going back to our remote work stories. You know, extroverts love that connectivity, they need to be with people, and they may not get it through a screen. Introverts were absolutely thrilled to that they had their heyday, that they didn't have to go into the office and they can have their private time.
Okay, I'm trying to detect the direction to go from there. Can you give me a question or like a...
Yeah, I just wanted to lay out that model of where we are. So we talk about personal abilities, we talk about environment, we talk about character. That's the ACE is abilities, character, and environment. But we talk about that. That's what attracted me is that it looked at it holistically. It looked at adaptability holistically, and it wasn't that kind of the one-shot wonders of, you know, let's find a speaker to come into our company and talk about being more gritty. And that will help them be more adaptable.
I think what I'm hearing there that I can maybe contribute to is you know, the three areas you're talking about, right, is personality or things which you choose to be, essentially. Then there's skills, which are things you need to learn, you know. So skill of being gritty, you kind of have to learn it in a way. You have to practice it. Mindset, these are things you have to practice. Whereas then the character skills are that. The ability skills are more around things that, you know, that you learn, right? So I'm actually mixing it up. So mindset and stuff is more around the abilities and stuff that they talk about, right? And the character stuff is more around the issues of being an extrovert, like you said, or an introvert, looking at things in the big picture and the details.
Are you hopeful? You know, right. Yeah.
That are hopeful and or skeptical. You know, these are things that are more character traits, and those can be changed immediately, right? You can actually literally be an extrovert immediately as an introvert if you want to, but we're convinced that we can't. And that, for me, what's interesting there is that there are three different ways to approach change when we're talking about future of work. One way is to work on people's skills, give them better skills, teach them to be more gritty, teach them to have a better mindset. Another way is to actually transform them as human beings, what they are. So if they're not hopeful and they're more negative thinking or skeptical or careful, like, you can teach them to change the way they behave or think about themselves. And that can actually literally technically be done in an instant, right? It's a quantum moment. You can change from not hopeful to hopeful instantly if you choose to. It's just hard to do it. But and there's the environmental factor, which works two ways, right? Which is actually change the environment and also, you know, figure out how people are experiencing the environment and change that. But that was exciting. Yep. I feel like I'm in a theme park.
I'm good.
So the point I'm making, I guess, is that for me, my main focus as a trainer and speaker and stuff is around the, mainly not around the skills as much as it's around the personality trait area. Because what, going back to the beginning of our talk, and I'll try to loop this around so we're wrapping in the where we began, but what keeps us from being adaptable is not primarily our skills of adaptability, it's primarily our personality, right? Because the very thing of who we are is a refusal to be adaptable in most people. Because mostly we've been taught, and this touches on future shock very powerfully, because we've been taught through all of human history, not only by our schools and our society, but by our very nature as humans, that we should grow up to be somebody named Ira Wolf or Michael Lee. And when we've done that, you know, we can describe ourselves and say, this is how we are. I am this way and that way. I like certain things. I don't like certain things. You know, this kind of people, I get along with, that kind of people I don't. And in those descriptions, we paralyze ourselves into, you know, an almost addictive state of, this is who I am.
Well, we talk about that. We're addicted to certainty.
Yeah. We're completely addicted to, not only to certainty, but addicted to ourselves, mm-hmm. right? Our description of who we are. And that is the enemy of adaptability. So what we need to do in the future of work and in the future of life is learn to actually be able to go, well, today Michael is going to choose to be, you know, cautious, because the problem I'm dealing with today requires caution. But yesterday I needed to be, you know, reckless and have reckless abandon, because that problem required that, right? And that is adaptability.
Yeah, I love that explanation. And I always hate this part of the show, because it's like we sort of just like, okay, now we're into something, let's pursue it. So I hope you'll come back We talked about having more people from the AQ community and continuing this conversation. So I'm looking forward to that. We've got to wrap up things here. One of the favorite parts of the show is this lightning round, and I'll ask you to keep your answers pretty quick. They get to know who Michael Lee is. So number one is when you need to kind of chill or meditate or relax or just get out of your or become creative, who's your go-to band or type of music that you go to?
You know, if what you're talking about there, the most useful way to be creative with sound is white noise. So to answer that question, not a band. Nature or literal white noise, like a cafe sound. But if I really want to just get, I'm like a 70s rock, 80s rock guy, just to get myself psyched up. It's very old stuff, but really, like, to answer your question properly, it's white noise.
Okay, so who's the band that you go to when you want to rock?
The Eagles.
Oh, okay, that's good. I'm not sure we've ever had the Eagles. I've done a couple hundred shows, and not sure the Eagles has ever come up, but they're a great band.
The Last Resort is the best song ever written in human history. So,
there you go. Here's I'm going to put your creative hat on. Then we're going to wrap. If you were a car, a vehicle, mm-hmm. what would you be and why?
I would be one of those transformer cars, so that I could change to be different cars. Because that would be really.
Well, that's definitely one of the best. That's definitely the first time we've had that response. Yeah, for sure. since you answered that pretty quick, one more. Who, if you could meet anyone, past or future, well, not future, but past or present, and have a dinner conversation with them, who would it be?
Now you're going to slow me down. I just thought of this yesterday. There was one person I thought of, and now I can't think of them. But
you have my problem.
There's just like a list I could go.
Yeah, I know. That's an impossible question.
Let me just go with Einstein, because that would be cool.
Wow, 2 weeks in a row, we got Einstein.
That wasn't my best answer, but I can't think of the guy that I thought of yesterday.
Not Alvin Toffler, huh? Or his wife. Actually, his wife was supposedly the brains behind Alvin Toffler.
Okay, Catherine maybe also could.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. All right. What's the best place for people to get in touch with you?
It appears to be running along the bottom of the screen. MichaelLee.biz is my website. Also LinkedIn, Michael Lee Creativity. You'll find it.
Okay, and we'll put that in the show notes. Hey, I want to thank everyone for watching today. Again, thank you for watching or listening, however you're doing it, to Geek Skeezers Googleization, for being part of Googleization Nation. If you're not a member of Googleization Nation yet, please go to googleizationnation.com. Thank you to Avanti for being our sponsor once again. And remember that if you're not registered yet for the Avanti Solutions Summit in Grapevine, Texas, the week of April 8th, or actually April 10th to the 12th, please do so. You can check them out. And please watch for the release of the Everywhere Work Report, which will be released during that event. And I'll certainly be reporting on that pretty regularly next week. So watch for my post. And also you'll be hearing about that on future podcasts. Thank you again, Michael. Thanks for joining us. I'm sure we'll be talking again. And until next week, don't let the shift hit your plans.
Thanks for watching Geeks, Geezers, and Googleization. Be sure to listen to the podcast and follow us on YouTube. This show was produced and edited by Hilton Productions.